Okay, this is the beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries 8B. We've been discussing group unity. We finished the section on the creative hierarchies. We're on page 1113 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and we're going on to discuss group relations. So then we are continuing with group relations from having looked at group unity. Page 1213, in establishing group relations with the superhuman kingdoms, that's the kingdom of souls, the kingdom of planetary lives, the kingdom of solar lives, kingdom of souls, kingdom of planetary lives, and the kingdom of solar lives. Whoops, that's not it. The kingdom of solar lives. Man has not so erred. So we are somehow misusing the lower lives. It's sort of a materialistic bias, a materialistic bias. Man has not so erred, though relatively little progress has as yet been made generally. And few are the human units who have merged their consciousness with that of the greater directing intelligences and yet remained in the human family as saviors and mediators. Yes. Well, it seems that the Christ was one, the Buddha was another. They kept their contact. Those on the path of earth service particularly have merged their consciousness with the greater directing intelligences and yet, in a way, remain with humanity as guides and teachers. So the progress here is not so great, but it is now going to accelerate. And this is the true Raja Yoga, to merge one's consciousness with that of the greater directing intelligences and yet remain in service with the human family. And to this, the power of Agni Yoga will be added in this new age, the Yoga of Fire, the Yoga of Synthesis. It will be apparent, therefore, that in the fourth or human kingdom, wherein the fourth hierarchy is seeking experience, note that. The fourth creative hierarchy is seeking experience through the fourth kingdom. And also through other kingdoms, through the kingdom of souls, and even earlier and unconsciously through the lower kingdoms, as far as I can understand. There is an effort on foot to effect the merging or centralization of the forces of three groups. This is happening in the fourth kingdom. The merging of three groups. We are living living in an age of integration and of fusion, and the Aquarian energies will certainly help this. So, okay. Fusion of the energy for which the animal kingdom stands, and it is part of our equipment. Of purely human energy, and this is mental, rational. And of the spiritual energy of the group, which is the exponent of Buddhic force, those in the kingdom of souls, and from a higher perspective, the members of the higher members of the fifth creative hierarchy, the solar angels, thus bringing in at the third great realization the force of Atma itself, of which Buddhi is but the vehicle. Well, the third great realization, that's an interesting term. Of course, it can mean the third initiation, or it can mean the fifth, depending on what the word great means. If we say that the first great initiation or realization is the transfiguration, then the third is mastership, and mastership is particularly focused in terms of spiritual will and Atma. So in the human kingdom now, these fusions are occurring. In the human kingdom, these fusions are occurring, and we are in this process of fusion. Looking above, looking horizontally to our fellow human units, looking below, and trying to come into right relation, right relationship. Well, that looks like another abbreviation opportunity. We'll call it right relationship with all the forms of life. below, on the same level and above. So we human beings are really in the process of fusion. The fourth ray is a ray of harmonious fusion achieved through friction. The ray of harmonious fusion achieved through friction. Or harmony through conflict is a more elegant way, I guess, of stating that. These three streams of force should hold the following place. Buddhic force should be positive, human energy equilibrized, and animal energy negative. This is the proper relationship. And we can test ourselves, is it for us? Does this pure reason, love, wisdom, higher harmony, intuition guide our lives? Are we tranquilly receptive to it, or receptive to it in a balanced manner? And can we affect our lower principles, which the animal also has, in a way that it behaves and is properly trained? Let's just say the animal aspect of our nature must be properly trained. And we, and this equilibrization means a tranquilized, yet alert astral body and mental body. And the Buddhic force is what guides us towards unity. This is the force guiding us towards unity. Or to word it otherwise, the positive controlling factor in the human group should be spiritual energy. That which is positive is also controlling. That which is negative is controlled. That which is positive is in the controlling position. So can we be guided by this unifying, lovingly wise factor, this factor of loving understanding? The positive controlling factor in the human group should be spiritual energy, and let's just say, look at the position of the fourth creative hierarchy. It is on the Buddhic plane. See, you know, how did that happen? Well, let me just look here. And go up here to the get the diagrams going. Okay. The positive controlling factor in the human group should be spiritual energy. So if you, you know, look at the map here for a moment, this is the map we probably use the most often. From the Buddhic aspect of the spiritual triad comes the positive control, at least at first. Then we have the human area, which is that of the mind particularly, and there should be a balance here between the soul illumined mind should be achieved. And all the rest of these 18 are lunar and really Martian and relate to the animal kingdom, and they are to be trained and controlled through the use of the seventh ray. I will say the use of the seventh ray will see this happening increasingly during the age of Aquarius, a seventh ray age. So the human energy is particularly human energy relates most to the mind in its two aspects. But so far, our mental, our lower mind is, in a way, excessively strong in some. And as I've said before, the new schools are to be brought into existence to counteract the tendency of the lower mind to be dominant. So, spiritual energy, we are to be controlled by the spiritual triad. You know, from the planetary point of view, we can even say that what's needed here is Mercury over Venus over Mars. Mars representing the animal kingdom, Venus in this particular case representing the realm of mind, where the human being strictly is focused, or the human being as a human being is focused, and Mercury, the realm of the buddhi or the spiritual triad. And sometimes we might want to reverse that Venus and Mercury, but we just have to understand why. So the positive and controlling factor in the human, in other words, our motive should be love, wisdom. Pure reason and intuition and harmony. These are all expressed from the Buddhic plane. The solar angels are great exemplars of Buddhi, and the masters of the wisdom are great exponents of Buddhi. And the human being, which right now is increasingly an exponent of Manas, and in its higher brackets very much so, has to incorporate the Buddhi. And this is the big challenge. Will the magic of the New Age be purely monastic, or will it be Buddhi monastic, in which case it will be white magic? DK has talked about the battle of the magicians coming up, or the contending of the two types of magicians, purely monastic and those who are the white magicians, and presumably guided by this positive controlling factor, which we call the Buddhic energy. Notice when we talk about spiritual energy, we're talking about the spiritual triad. When speaking of, quote, spiritual energy, we speak of the spiritual triad. Okay. So the positive controlling energy in the human group should be spiritual energy toward which the animal nature should be entirely receptive. And this is our occult training, you know. This is what we're trying to do. We are trying to do in our occult training. These two holding towards each other the relative position of father and mother, and I suppose the son is the equilibrizer. The human being is the son of mind, who is the equilibrizer. The purely human being serves as the balancing factor and brings about an adjustment between the spirit aspect and the material. At first, the solar angel helps the human being do this. Then the human being can take over. It's that way with parenting too, you know. You teach your children what they don't know yet, and at some point you step back and they can do it just fine. You know, it's like riding a bicycle. The guide wheels are on there, and then you remove them and the child is going. Or I'm remembering teaching my son how to ride. He had a lot of Libra and he had a very good sense of balance. It was almost immediate. At first, the parent was there, sort of holding on to the bicycle, running along, making sure there was no fall. Then the parent lets go, and the child is riding the bicycle, unknown to himself, that he is really riding without the parent's guidance. Sometimes they look back and say, oh, you're not holding on, and then they fall. But that's quickly overcome. It is this triple group relation which makes the microcosm such a genuine reflection of the greater man, and the fourth kingdom a true exponent of the cosmic process. In other words, we are the three who are to become the two, but we are the three who eventually become the two and then the one. So we have these three distinct factors fused into two, with the soul-infused animal nature, and then spirit and soul fuse, and we have the one. We're all working now, if we're in the path of occult training, we're working now on this. Okay. The same laws govern the relationship of these three factors as govern the group interrelation of the Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva aspects. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, or also we could call it three aspects of the occult trinity. We could call it three persons of the three persons of the egoic trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma. Time and space, or divine opportunity. How interesting. Oh, this is so good. Saturn, the planet of opportunity. And Saturn also, planet of time and space, especially of time, but not excluding spaces within space. Saturn, the planet of opportunity. So, time and space are divine opportunity. That's really what a way to look at time and space, to understand what they are. Why they are presented to us. Through them, we are becoming internally equipped with quality. Play their parts in microcosmic group work as they do in the macrocosmic. So basically, he's telling us, look at this, that time and space, in fact, do exist in macrocosmic life. So many people say, well, you know, I've gotten rid of time, I've gotten rid of space and all that, but it's usually time and space as we of limited consciousness understand time and space. The macrocosm too, the greater lives too, have their time-space orientation and their time-space schedules. So time and space with divine opportunity play their parts in microcosmic group work, as they do in the macrocosmic. And cyclic evolution proceeds in its work of group adjustment for both units, or for all units, or for the three units, in order to produce eventual group harmony in both cases. So the cyclic, basically what he's saying here is the cyclic process leads to group harmony. Yes, the cyclic process leads to group harmony through manifold adjustments. In other words, these different levels of life expression, as long as they're going to interact, have to get used to each other. There's always a period of adjustment when two energies are brought together, two energies of different levels, or three energies of different levels, a period of some friction at first, and then a smoothing out of the process, the fourth ray and the seventh ray at work. We have in our solar system the three aspects of the divine logoic trinity and the Shiva, Vishnu, Brahma aspects, and they all have to work together as one. The three are the one and must demonstrate as one. So, yes. Okay. These three are the one and must learn to manifest as one, and that's the goal of the entire solar logoic process, to bring about that great group unity in which all aspects are harmoniously interrelated according to their various functions. And, you know, as it has sometimes been said, you know, working together as the fingers on one hand, given the skillful person who can use those fingers, the surgeon, the pianist, you know, the people who use the mechanic, the one who uses the fingers to great effect, all working harmoniously together, but the hand is, in a way, what they emerge from. So they all have a similar root. It is the harmony of the individual within himself and with his environing units, and his realization of the essential oneness of all life, which brings about the great expansions of consciousness and leads to individual identification with some greater whole. You know, he has these beautiful summary sentences. So, three factors here: harmony within oneself, and that is in a way stage one. We remember these stages, right? So harmony within all the different factors within himself, stage one, and with his environing units, stage two, and his realization of the essential oneness with all life, or the greater whole, well, this is, in a way, stage three. Well, let's put stage three here, the essential oneness of all life. And so if we are harmonious within ourselves, and so many of us are somehow inhibited or frictionalized by internecine warfare, as the Tibetan calls it, the different parts of ourselves warring against each other in the pre-integrated state. And you can hardly be at peace with others if you're not at peace with yourself. So once we achieve a degree of internal peace between the different aspects of ourselves, harmony, we can relate to the parallel units, our environing units of the same type, and also in other groups. And finally, relating with the one, or with the embracing life, and be in harmony with that, or in harmony with the will of God. And this brings about expansions of consciousness. In other words, harmony brings release. Release and expansion. So if we are still wasting our energies in frictionalized interplay, we are not going to be liberated into the next expansion of consciousness. We have to achieve integration before liberation. And if our attention is being attracted by all kinds of internal frictions, what hope then to expand into a larger state of consciousness? We have to overcome these frictions. Then a harmony will result, which will open the door to expansion. And perhaps when we are at peace with ourselves or within ourselves, those expanded states of consciousness do begin to dawn. I suppose there are moments of grace when even in a frictionalized state, suddenly there is the realization of the great non-friction, the great harmony. But in general, if human energy is preoccupied with fighting, it's not going to move ahead cooperatively. The human race that's fighting with each other all the time cannot move forward into what a realized unity can reveal. So we have to bring our fourth ray into a state of harmony instead of always pursuing conflict. And then the second ray aspect of the human soul, one day it is to be a second ray soul of humanity, will show itself in a great expansion of consciousness. The work of a human atom, you know, and in cosmic fire, the human being is referred to as a human atom, therefore, is but a replica of that which proceeds in the planetary or solar atom and serves as an incentive to those minute individual lives which find their place in the six subhuman kingdoms. Yes, yes, indeed, I see how it goes. Three elemental and three material. Notice we are setting an example, even if the example is appreciated unconsciously. So there are six below. Interesting, six below. How many kingdoms? Then 10 kingdoms, correct? So the seven kingdoms, working from down to from above to below, at the moment the solar kingdom of solar lives, kingdom of planetary spirits, kingdom of souls, kingdom of the human kingdom, the animal kingdom, vegetable kingdom, mineral kingdom, and the three kingdoms of elemental essence, which are the minute elemental lives, still on the involutionary path. Interesting to see that phrase, not often seen, six subhuman kingdoms. Usually we think about the three subhuman kingdoms because we are thinking in terms of evolutionary kingdoms. And how often, you know, this is the very abstracted perspective to call the human being the human atom. But it does put things in proportion, doesn't it? And the wonderful way of, that this book proceeds is to always give us this parallelism between four types of atoms. Sometimes other atoms are brought in, but the concentration is upon four, particularly the atom of substance, the human atom, the planetary atom, and the solar atom. Each one of these beings considered to be an integrated unity which has to consciously or unconsciously relate within itself, relate to its peers, and relate to the containing whole in which it plays its part. In one case, we have a correspondence of so close a nature as to be almost a replica and on a replica on a tiny scale. In one case. Now, what is that case? And I would say that case, to me, is the correspondence between the solar atom and the human atom. As I've said, I've often found correspondences to be more faithful and more accurate when comparing the solar logos to the human being than when comparing the human being to the planetary logos. Maybe someday I'll show you what I mean for those kinds of correspondences which come up a bit vague in the comparison between the human being and the planetary logos, but seem to be clarified when comparing the human being to the solar logos. In the other we have analogies which produce what may be regarded as a reflection of the whole. Right. In both cases, we have basic group relations, fundamental group laws which produce group interrelations and bring about an essential union between all forms of life. So we have relations and the laws which are to control those relations. That's what we have. Okay, we have... and the laws which are to control those relations. Not so many human beings yet live according to the law of the soul or the laws which are to control group relations between human beings. We live according to arbitrary systems of justice which are man-made and oftentimes ensure the material rights rather than have anything to do with what we might call spiritual rights. It is not my intention to say much anent group forms and work. Well, not yet, anyway. Maybe later in the book Esoteric Psychology. It is for the student to study himself and that which surrounds him and thus arrive at his own conclusions. We will therefore close this part of our treatise by a brief enumeration of what? Let me just see if I've really gotten this correctly. The work of the human atom, therefore, is but a replica of that which proceeds in the planetary or solar atom and serves as an incentive to the minute individual lives which find their place in the six subhuman kingdoms. And that incentive is going to be, you know, somehow an unconscious incentive, really. These lives are not self-conscious, though they are conscious. So in one case, we have a correspondence of so close a nature as to be almost a replica on a tiny scale, and as I said, I've given you my opinion about that. In the other, we have analogies which produce what may be regarded as a reflection of the whole. The whole is the solar logos, in a way, in this context, and that whole is reflected in the planetary atom, the human atom, and the tiny atom or even particle of substance. The tiny atom is composed of constituents which themselves are molecular. In other words, they have parts. The constituents of the atom still have parts, and who knows how subdivisible these parts of parts of parts and so forth can be. Well, we are in search of the minute at this very moment, and we are learning about the divisibility of what appeared to be maybe indivisible parts. Maybe at one point the atom was considered to be indivisible, as if they were the fundamental building blocks of nature. But we know that greater atoms are divisible into lesser atoms and so forth. Smaller atoms can be combined to form greater atoms. It's a question, again, of the study of the one and the many, but in relation to very minute factors. It is not my intention to say much anent these group forms. Okay, so we will therefore close this part of our treatise by a brief enumeration of the three atomic relations, the seven laws of group work, and the 22 methods of interplay. And atomic relations do not concern only the tiny atom of matter. The seven laws of group work, and these are called in esoteric psychology, the seven laws, of the soul. Seven laws of the soul. Well, how about an abbreviation? I think we could do that, as long as I don't have to use the word slots. Seven laws of the soul. Okay. And the 22 methods of group interplay, normally you would think of 21 perhaps, but maybe there's going to be some synthesis done. These 32 phases and ideas must be applied in degree to all atoms. How interesting. Although it's certainly beyond our capacity to do so, the tiny lives, which are the sum total of all material worlds, and what is material after all? A matter is, okay, right. So matter is prakriti, and it can be very subtle. Is it found only on the cosmic physical plane? Well, this we do not know, but maybe not, maybe not. In other words, is the ultimate bubble of the koilon, a bubble of the koilon, bubble in the koilon, bubble of the koilon, of the cosmic physical plane in some manner divisible? Because we do have cosmic planes, and if it were divisible, we would have higher cosmic planes of a prakritic nature. So when does the divisibility of ultimate constituents stop? Are there atoms of the lower levels of the cosmic astral plane? Just as there are tiny constituents on the very highest level of the cosmic physical plane. Cosmic astral on one side, cosmic physical on another. Well, maybe we don't know that yet. The tiny lives, which are the sum total of the material worlds, the planetary atom, the macrocosm for all on the five planes, and this is interesting, the planetary atom is considered to hover above the five planes, and thus to be associated with the plane, plane above, which is the monadic plane. That is an interesting thought, and again connects the planetary atom with the second creative hierarchy. Yes, you know all I've gone through to try to discriminate between the second creative hierarchy and the planetary logoi, but there's a definite connection with this second creative hierarchy and with the monadic plane and with the planetary logos particularly. And, you know, you kind of wonder that if the planetary logos is the macrocosm for all on the five planes, whether the solar logos would be the macrocosm for all on the six planes. I think I can put that down. The solar atom, synthesis of all the seven planes and the seven evolutions. Okay. Well, somehow, the planetary logos relates to the, or supervises, all that transpires on the planes of Brahma. The five superhuman and human worlds, or the five worlds of, as they often say, five worlds of superhuman and human evolution. But the solar logos, I suppose, supervises the six, but synthesizes the seven. And, you know, in these domains of influence, there's a lot to straighten out about the influence of a planetary logos and the influence of a solar logos. The solar logos, of course, is substanding all of the areas of supervision of all the planetary logoi. So one planetary logos does not supervise everything that goes on all five planes of superhuman and human evolution, but only on the five planes as they relate to his particular ring pass knot. But the solar logos penetrates all the rings pass knot of the planetary logoi and somehow synthesizes all of these logoi and synthesizes the planes as well. But this has to, you know, a planetary logos, however, is active on all the cosmic planes from his causal body on down. So we're talking about a specific area of etheric activity for a planetary logos. But a planetary logos has a cosmic astral body and has a cosmic mental body and a cosmic causal body. So it's not like saying that the influence of a planetary logos is only from the sixth plane and on down, but, you know, let's just say the sixth cosmic plane, well, the monadic plane, is a special area of focus for the planetary logos, just as I suppose the logoic plane is such an area of focus for the solar logos etherically demonstrating. We're talking about the etheric demonstration of these two types of great beings. We're not taking away from their cosmic astral and their cosmic mental demonstration. There is that gap, as I've talked about, between the location of the causal body of the of the solar logos on the first subplane of the cosmic mental plane and the causal bodies of non-sacred planets, or at least of the Earth, on the third subplane. And reason seems to indicate that on the second subplane there must be some causal bodies, and one would expect to find the causal bodies of sacred planets on the second subplane. I don't know that this has been particularly confirmed, but that's what I would suspect. Even the three persons of the logoic trinity, or the three cosmic logoi, have their causal bodies on the first subplane, the same subplane as the solar logos. So then, you know, then you begin to ask, well, okay, where is the causal body of the cosmic logos? Or the causal body of the one about whom naught may be said? Are these on supercosmic and super-supercosmic planes? One day, in an effort to play a great mind game, I suppose, we will draw up those super-cosmic planes and super-supercosmic planes and try to figure out the correspondences as to where that those causal bodies would be. There would be a way to think of this, but I'm not going to trouble my head about this right now, because, you know, there's just so many things that haven't been assimilated that are much closer to home and are so necessary for the life of discipleship. Would be interesting, because as I've said, you know, if solar angels have monads that are not on the cosmic physical plane, then the great solar Petri, or solar angel, which underlying the causal body of a solar logos, would have a monad on something that is a super cosmic plane, not on the list of cosmic planes at all. In other words, all our seven cosmic planes would become an etheric physical super cosmic plane, and probably that monad would have its place on the super cosmic astral plane, which is never drawn, of course, but which, you know, can be imagined. And then we can say, you know, in a way, that the one about whom naught may be said has kind of a life demonstration on the second ether of the supercosmic planes. But we'd almost have to go up to the third supercosmic plane to find its causal body, perhaps. You see, I'm doing it. I said I wouldn't do it. Okay. And then go up to the up and down, crazy terms, go up to the monadic level of the supercosmic planes, some six super cosmic planes above, in order to find the location of its monad. Everything has a monad because everything is being. So Well, I guess we'll just have to say that the organizational structure of the entire cosmos is well in hand, and that as our provinces of participation increase, we will learn more about them. For the moment, you know, they're very far removed from our immediate human problems, which are actually taking place at quite a primitive level, if you think about it. You know, when you look at the Ageless Wisdom and what's been presented by the Tibetan and other masters, it's giving a vista of possible revelation, which is so far beyond the struggles that we are presently working out, just whether we can have even right emotional relations with each other, not based on fear, hostility, greed, anger, aggression, you know, all of our wonderful Hydra heads. We're working at a pretty primitive level, but if we do not succeed in doing that primitive work, then we can never advance into our higher potential. So we have to do the dirty work, you know, sort it all out in the here and now, in the apparently here and now, in order to achieve the harmony which will promote expansion. As I've said in musical terms, when a chord is harmonious, something flies free. When the chord is dissonant, something is imprisoned. And, you know, anybody sensitive to music or listening to choir music, whatever, can discover that is so. So we have to learn how to be in tune with each other if we are to fly free. There's a, you know, think about the flight that takes place at the fourth initiation in Egyptian mythology. I'm not sure of those terms, but I know that there are two birds there, and one is the solar angel and one is the soul of man, and they both fly at that point because fourth ray harmony is achieved. If there's no harmony, there's no flight. Okay. Now he's getting into the three atomic relations, page 1215. Individual atomic relation. This concerns the central fire of all atoms and affects the relation of that positive center to all within its sphere of influence, you know. So, for man, the jewel in the lotus, which is really the jewel which the monad is. I've come to the conclusion that the monad is a jewel. What is a jewel anyway but a configuration of energies of seven vibratory levels? A jewel is a perfectly arranged configuration of energies consisting of seven vibratory levels. What is the arrangement and so forth? I couldn't say, but we know that the jewels we are dealing with are sevenfold, and these seven facets of the jewels are seven vibratory levels. These seven facets of the jewels. Oh, Jupiter scheme, no good. Of the jewels are seven vibratory levels, and through them one can pass onto the seven paths and so forth. So it's almost as if we, the unit of consciousness, are in the central fire. We, as the unit of being consciousness, are the central fire, and in a way, although it's not accurate, look out from the midst of the central fire or jewel. Whoop. Or jewel. Central fire or jewel. Being consciousness. B and C. That's a good abbreviation. I have a passion for abbreviations this morning. And we'll call this the being consciousness. That's what we are. I'd like to, it's not a very euphonious phrase, but we are, the human being is a unit of being consciousness. Of course, it's like, being conscious, but we are two things. This is reflected as Atma Buddhi. Okay, Atma Buddhi. ATB. ATB. Atma Buddhi Manas, ATBM. Okay, this is Atma and Buddhi. Okay. So that's what we are, in a way. We are. Indeed, we are. So we be. We are. We're a unit. We're a being. We are. But that being is sentient. That being touches. That being can receive impact. So we're a unit of being and of consciousness. Atma, Buddhi. Right. So the three atomic relations, the individual relation, the systemic relation, concerns the relation of all atoms to other atoms which come within their range of influence or their scale of contacts, and this is the environing units. The systemic relation and the universal. This deals with the identification of all atoms with these particular groups and their consequence of emergence in the interests of the greater whole. So what do we have? We have the individual, systemic, universal. Oh, that's okay. So individual relation, systemic relation, and universal relation. He's giving us these trinities, the sort of stage one, stage two, stage three, individual stage one, systemic stage two, universal stage three relation. And, right group relations another one of these, if you don't mind. Right group relations. So we'll call it that. Right group relations. Consists of dealing with all of these. Must deal with all of these levels. So the laws of the soul, have to do with these relations. So, individual, systemic, universal. The individual deals with the third aspect. The systemic relations are the soul aspect, and the universal relations are the monadic aspect. These three domains, individual, systemic, universal, can be related to the third aspect divinity, the second aspect of divinity, and the first aspect of divinity. It might be noted here that the immediate objective of the human kingdom is consciously to establish systemic relations within the system, right? We've had our time of individualism. Individualism is, if overly perpetuated, is dangerous. Is dangerous because it is all out of relation to the other units in the system. So it leads to fragmentation and not to unification. So it's to establish systemic relations and be actively and consciously part of group work. Well, you know, this is so practical, and we begin to understand how this works out, even in our esoteric field, and how, you know, so many of us have been unfortunately involved in altercations and frictions between those who should be working harmoniously in brotherhood. Our lack of loving understanding accounts for this, and somehow we reinforce our individualism. Well, after seeing the failure of that particular approach, perhaps we can get on with establishing systemic relations, and I want to say harmonious systemic relations. The individual consciousness of relationship is somewhat established, owing to there being self-consciousness. It's the first stage of Leo, right? Now, the work for the subhuman kingdoms is the establishment of conscious realization, or the bringing about of a distinct individualism in every form of atomic life, and we can call this individualization, towards which the subhuman kingdoms tend, whilst the object for the superhuman lives is the establishment of universal consciousness, which will enable every planet and solar life to be consciously and intelligently part of a cosmic whole. And some of the more advanced human beings who have established right stemic relations are working on the first phases of universal relations. So anyway, the non-self-conscious lives are working through self-consciousness. The individual lives are working towards group consciousness. The group conscious lives are working towards universal consciousness. And again, these can be presented as the three phases of Leo: the individual, the group, the universal, or the one. I am the individual, I am that, I am the group, I am that I am, or I am that and that am I. The universal consciousness. All right. Well, I think we are reaching the point. I don't want to start this seven laws of group work on a program that is on the tail end of a program. Okay, so this is going to be the end of a Cosmic Fire webinar Commentaries 8b, page 1216, and we're going to begin with Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries 9a on page 1216, and we'll deal with the laws of group work. And meanwhile, I think it would be advantageous for us to, at this point, sound the Great Invocation together. Point of light within. From the point of light within. Well, there it is. Okay. So, we'll use the note G as I have been using, you know, and we'll do that and then move on to the next phase. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of man, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Friends, good. We will move on to number 9 in just a little while, and getting into this really big subject, which is expanded powerfully in Esoteric Psychology Volume 2, and I hope I do get to that book. It is the book which I have taught the most, in a way, in many, many esoteric psychology courses. Well, it seems like many, many. Maybe it's not really many, many, but over a long period of years. But I don't think I'm going to break out of Cosmic Fire to go to discuss the Laws of the Soul section, which is, you know, probably over 100 pages in length. That I'll have to do in its own right. All right, we'll see you soon.